Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Mission 16W. Bring the cup home to Denver. Getting you set for tonight's Game 6 in St. Louis. Here's Stokely and Zach.
Don't have to think about it. It is right here. It is right now.
Modern love so strange. Said you never know.
How you doing today, Matt Smith?
I am doing well, Zach. How are you today? I'm better than yesterday. I'll tell you what. I am much better than yesterday.
Have you gathered yourself?
Just a tad. Yeah, just a tad. You know, look.
Oh man.
And also,
I don't blame you. By the way.
Yeah. No. I heard you a little bit yesterday. You were. Maybe not to the extent that I was, but you were feeling it too.
I was. You know what I was doing? I was just acknowledging what happened.
Exactly.
I don't know why there was like a resistance. You know,
I have no idea.
We're going to be joined by D-Mac later in the show. I just don't get it. The everything is fine. Like
right.
The old meme, the whole mm-hmm. place is burning. I got my cup. This
right.
is fine.
Right.
This is fine.
Yeah.
Now I'm not saying it. You know, it wasn't a game seven loss. Mm-hmm. You know, the Avs are still alive, but. To not acknowledge, like, sometimes I said this with the Tim Connelly stuff, like, sometimes it's just a bad day.
Right.
And you just acknowledge it and lean into it. Everything doesn't have to be fine at all times. And it was a collapse and just acknowledging it, accepting it, and then ultimately, hopefully, moving on from it. But it was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. And I think I was so disappointed because this time around, when you've got a shot to put teams away, you have to take advantage. And the fashion with which they let that slip the other night was so disappointing in what could have been a gigantic momentum boost into the next round if they were able to sustain and hold
on. No doubt.
And so, you know, I looked at it and I said, you know, this is a team who year after year has fallen short of expectation. And this time around, that isn't an option. Like, if you do not accomplish your primary goal of making it to the Stanley Cup Finals, right? That, I mean, the primary goal is to win it, right? But if you don't get there, it's going to be a very interesting reaction in the offseason.
When there'll be time for all that.
Exactly.
There will be time for all that.
But
and hopefully we don't get to that point.
From, right?
No, you're right. And like those conversations to act like, you know, and look, they started happening organically on the back half of yesterday's show. From, you know, James Merrillat and Stoke, and I think I agree with them, by the way, that, like, if for whatever reason you can't get out of this round again for nearly a half a decade now with some of the best players in the world and legitimate Stanley Cup expectations, not just from, like, rah-rah fans, the odds makers, they don't give a damn about me or you or this segment or this station.
Right.
They try to make it even as possible, and they pegged 2 years in a row the Avs as the Cup favorites at the start of the regular season and at the start of the playoffs.
Exactly.
And if you can't get out of this round, and I believe they're going to find a way to do it. We'll ultimately get to our predictions a little bit later in the show. But I don't know how you can bring everyone back, and especially Jared Bednar.
Right.
There is real pressure on him tonight.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. The next two games, you have two chances, right? In life, you don't often get second chances. In the playoffs, you rarely get them. And when you get them, you better take advantage. So it's a huge night upcoming for the entire organization and the franchise's outlook for sure. Because if for some reason you don't get it done tonight, you come back in a building where you just lost two in a row and you're going to be gripping your stick so tight it snaps, Zach. So it's going to be very interesting to see how things unfold this evening.
Well, they have got to get it done. They have got to get this done. There is a monkey on their back. There is a cloud above them. They have got to move past this. We've seen other teams hit their head and break through.
Right.
Alexander Ovechkin.
Sure.
And the Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
For years, this was a top two player. It was him and Sid the Kid. You could have that conversation through the years, and they could just never break through that second round. They got through. They went and won a cup.
Mm-hmm.
That could be our existence here over the next month. We could have a parade. But at the same time, there's a handful of things that have got to change. And we're going to go through and rank at the top of the hour.
Right.
Who needs to step up the most?
Like, oh, good.
In order, which should be a fun exercise.
Yeah.
And we want to thank our listeners in Henderson for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. But and we'll have that conversation. But Bednar, like, I was talking about it with Stoke yesterday. In terms of the momentum being flipped and the collapse of Game 5 and how it fell, he said, look, that's on the players. Like, in that moment, it's the heat of the battle. The game over a game, day in between reset, that's now on Bednar. And I kind of like that sort of transfer of responsibility over the 48 hours.
That's my biggest question for tonight. Is how, after such an emotional roller coaster the other night and dropping one you absolutely had in the palm of your hand, how do you get up for Game 6? Because putting myself in their shoes, walking onto that plane, I would just be furious thinking, why are we here? We failed. We didn't get the job done. There's no reason we should still be playing. We should have the weekend off. And so when I look at it, I'm very curious to see what strings he pulls to get them motivated. And I've seen some rumblings so far that there may be some lineup adjustments tonight. So it'll be very interesting to see how that proceeds.
Okay. Is there something tangible that?
Yeah. Yeah. No. So it sounds like Alex Newhook today at practice was in the white penalty kill jersey and Andre Burakovsky was back with the power play unit. So that leads me to believe that we will see a reintroduction to the lineup of Andre Burakovsky, which, look, you know, I've been a big critic of his and I was an advocate of the move to scratch him and get Newhook in. But I hope there was a fire lit under his tail, because that's a guy who does have Stanley Cup title experience, right? He was on that Caps team. And so they need a guy like that to step up when it matters most. Tonight's a great opportunity for him. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do and seeing if he can't get back in my good graces, Zach. That's what I'm looking for tonight.
And I'm sure that's his number one goal, back in Matt Smith's good graces.
I think it would be, too. I mean, you're sitting there as a healthy scratch thinking, what can I do just to get Matt to say something nice about me again?
someone said the win in Game 5 should have been an explosion of good feeling. It would have been instantly the McKinnon game. There's no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt. It would have gone down in Denver sports history that, like, the ceiling that you've been trying to get through, got bust through. Just with such authority from your best player when you needed it the most. It wasn't just the hat trick. It was the order in which it fell. You gave up a 3-goal lead. He bailed you out. It would have been just, and it still should be to a certain degree, but you don't have the finalized. It wasn't finalized.
No, we remember it for the wrong reasons now.
Totally.
And that's what really kills you about it, because you go back and you watch that. I mean, as far as in the playoffs go, in recent memory, I struggle to think of an individual effort across any sport quite like that, where you literally put the team on your back. And you know what's really interesting is that he skates angry. Like, he gallops. He's the only guy in the NHL that gallops. And when you can see a guy like that do what he does best, you realize how special this team can be. But you also realize that there was something missing in the rest of the series from him. And so
different.
He did. And so what you saw last night out of Connor McDavid, who won the game in overtime to clinch the spot in the Western Conference Finals for the Oilers, he scores the overtime game winner and they win that game, right? But throughout the playoffs, outside of a guy named Lemieux and a guy named Gretzky, there hasn't been anyone with a greater Stanley Cup playoffs run so far than Connor McDavid, and he's doing it every single night. My point here is we need to see Nathan MacKinnon string some of these together to pull this team up by their bootstraps to get out of this round.
He's got to duplicate the performance. He'd been rather quiet offensively in terms of just getting it in the back of the net.
Right.
You get the explosion. Now you got to run it back. It's not just him. We know the other main characters who need to step up. But, man, there is real pressure. What is your vibe day over day? Because I know yesterday you said I was at like a 7 or an 8.
Yeah, I was 10.
You were at a 10.
Yeah.
A day later,
I'm like 9.
Okay.
And the reason why is that you can't squander golden opportunities in the playoffs, and that's what they did. So I always believe that after that, there is a mental effect on that team, and I'm hoping it's not too significant tonight.
All right, we are just a few hours away from the most pivotal game, really, in Colorado sports in recent memory.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much on the line tonight, from a tangible and substance standpoint, but a narrative standpoint, storyline standpoint. It's just chock full of them, and we're going to be discussing it here throughout the day.
Chock full?
Chock full?
I think it's chalk. Now that Stokes here, there's a little role reversal. Now that Stokes not here, there's a little role reversal.
We're going to check in with D-Mac just a little bit later.
Don't get your elephant in front of your skis.
Do that, dude. We're going to check in with D-Mac from St. Louis. That's going to happen again here just a little bit later this afternoon. And we'll see what his tone is live from St. Louis. There was a thought that considering the relationship between Nikola Jokic and Tim Connelly, that Connelly's exit could impact Jokic re-signing with Denver. We have some clarity on that. We'll pass along next.
It's Mission 16W. Bring the cup home to Denver. Getting you set for tonight's Game 6 in St. Louis. Here's Stokely and Zach.
There was a thought that considering the incredible relationship between Nikola Jokic and Tim Connelly, that Tim Connelly, the now former Nuggets team president, his exit could impact Jokic re-signing with Denver. We have some clarity on that. Matt tried to correct something I said at the end of the last segment. It's got to be really something when you've like publicly on the air try to correct someone and you're the one that's wrong. That's got to be an interesting feeling.
Yeah, but, you know, wouldn't be the first, and I promise won't be the last, Zach.
The thought that, hey, and it was worth the discussion. It really was. Mm-hmm. You know, just a few days ago, they're like, hold on, be careful now. Like, there's this assumption that, you know, of course Jokic is going to resign because Jokic said he would resign at the end of the season. He said if they put it in front of me, he'll sign it. The $260 million supermax.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was like, okay, Tim Connelly is no longer with the organization. Did that piss off Jokic? And you want to know what I have to always remind myself, Matt, and Matt Smith filling in for a Stoke today? It's the NBA. Anything can happen right in this league. It's the NBA. What you say today could tomorrow not be true. Stars have the most leverage and flexibility of any sport. It is the most transient sport that we have among our four major professional sports here in the United States. So I'm like, well, let's just pump the brakes on the assumption. Turns out, the assumption was true. Mike Singer, Shams Charania, both on the same page that Nikola Jokic will, in fact, sign the $260 million Supermax.
Yeah, a bit of a relief, right? I mean, not that we were really all that concerned, but like you just mentioned, anything is possible right now. And certainly it would seem that with such a prominent figure in Tim Connelly leaving the organization, that you just want to double check that your superstar and back-to-back MVP doesn't have any second thoughts about, you know, the franchise's long-term plans. And so really, Zach, now the task is up to the organization to prove to Jokic that they can build a winner around him. And a lot of that has to do with getting Murray and Porter Jr. back, certainly. But there is a lot more that goes into putting a championship roster here in Denver than just getting those guys back healthy. So I think it's a big first step. And for Jokic, I think his loyalty year over year has only deepened to this franchise, because I don't think this is a guy, just from my personal interactions with him, that would really want to leave. Like, he doesn't really care about nightlife. He's not a spotlight guy. This is the perfect market for him. He loves it here. So I totally see the synergy with the franchise. However, at a certain point, if you do continue to run into the same roadblock, that gets frustrating for everybody. So I think it was a safe assumption to just want to double check that his thought process had not changed.
He's expected to sign it. The 5-year, $260 million Supermax extension will ultimately and eventually make Jokic the highest paid player in NBA history.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
It's pretty wild. Yeah,
that here in Denver,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have the highest paid NBA player ever.
I mean, a back-to-back MVP in Denver alone is absolutely wild. But the guy with the number one price tag in the league, who every other team would move mountains to have on their team.
No doubt.
He's here.
No doubt. No doubt. But you touched on something that we're just going to be continuously following, is that what are the moves yet to be made around him? You know your other three quote-unquote cornerstone guys. But, you know, championship teams in the NBA especially, like, you have to, as a just flat out the bottom of the pyramid upon which everything else is predicated, your high-end superstar talent. You have to have a Hall of Famer or two, traditionally, to be an NBA champion. About every 10 years or so, there's an outlier. Mm-hmm. There's a Toronto Raptors who has, yeah, first ballot Hall of Famer, but then a bunch of other, like, just awesome players, Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam, et cetera.
The Pistons.
The Pistons are a great example. And they were such an outlier because they had a Hall of Famer, Ben Wallace,
right,
one of the great defensive players of all time. But then they had every other guy in their prime as an all-star at the same time.
Right.
I'll never forget the Eastern Conference All-Stars coming out for their starters and Larry Brown's coaching them, and there was four Pistons.
Right.
It was like a Billups and Rasheed Wallace and Rip Hamilton and Ben Wallace.
Right.
And then they also had an infusion of young talent in Tayshaun Prince at the time. You look at a team like Golden State, they have that at the top, but they also have the fringe, the Jordan Pools, the Kamingas of the world. And I think that in addition to the guys at the top of the Nuggets roster, some work needs to be done, you know, around that main course. What's the sides? And those need to get better.
Yeah, and you just brought up the Pistons and having guys who were all-stars but not necessarily Hall of Famers. Think about Andrew Wiggins right now for the Warriors. He was an all-star starter this year, right? By injury replacement, but he was an all-star starter. And if you watch the Western Conference Finals, the player that really elevated the Warriors when they weren't shooting the ball proficiently, consistently, was Wiggins, because he was getting to the offensive glass. He was getting them second chance opportunities, and he was creating pressure in the lane. And when you have a team full of not just your Thompsons, your Currys, your Greens, if you can have a Wiggins and a Poole and other guys who make your team hard to guard. And when you talk about the way that the Nuggets need to play, here's my biggest criticism of Tim Connelly's tenure here. He failed to add consistent shooters for a very long time.
No doubt.
And there was a neglect of the backup five, rim protector, floor runner position that could absolutely help Nikola Jokic and would have for years. And we saw what that could look like in a very small and tiny version of it with DeMarcus Cousins, who was on the street.
Yep.
And they brought him in. So, you know, while I do respect a lot of what Tim Connelly did, a lot of those moves for these players, I mean, you talk about Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt, Gary Harris, those guys aren't here anymore. And so you have to find a way to move forward with a very tight roster with little flexibility. There's just not a lot in the numbers, because we know Kroenke's not going to pay leagues and leagues and leagues into the tax. They're already going to have
They're already in there.
Right. Right. And so for me, when I look at it, I say, okay, you really have your core here. You need to make those fringe moves count. And so now Calvin Booth has a lot on his plate.
There's no question. If you're just joining us, we're reacting to the news coming out over the last 24 hours that Nikola Jokic is, in fact, expected, despite Tim Connelly's exit, expected to sign the five-year, $260 million Supermax extension that will make him the highest-paid player in the history of the NBA. With the Calvin Booth thing, so much is unknown. And it's not even like so much. It's all unknown.
It's completely unknown.
There is no segment of known outside of that he came up under Tim, that he is, you know, quote unquote, highly thought of in league circles. I've heard that a million times. Okay. Former player. So he has a unique perspective. Okay. But there's a thought. Here's, I think, is the number one thought. And we heard a little bit about this from Shams Charania, and you're hearing whispers from people who cover the team very closely, this sentiment that Tim Connelly, and by the way, if you missed our conversation with Shams Charania, who broke the Tim Connelly news, you can find it at denverfan.com on the Stokely and Zach podcast. Tim Connelly was Mr. Process, Mr. We don't skip steps.
Right.
And, you know, I remember him sitting right here 5 feet from me, and I asked him, you know, about, hey, what's the ultimate goal here? He's like, look, we're so process oriented. And he gave this long response, and relationship based and all this stuff. The other side is like Calvin Booth. There is a thought that Calvin Booth is like, yeah, I'm like less about like like the relationships with like your family. Like, we're going to make moves. Right. Like, this is a basketball operation and we're going to treat it as such. So you may see more aggressive moves here over the next 2 years than we've seen, say, over the last five.
You know, and I go back to the post-mortem after the season, the postseason press conference for Tim Connelly, when he sat there in front of the Denver media and was talking about how aggressive they were going to be this offseason. And I was sitting there scratching my head. I was like, how? You don't have the roster flexibility to match your words. And so now we know he's not going to be here, which I wonder if that was a new conversation that popped up, or maybe that's something that he had on the back burner, you know, maybe since the season ended and he's been thinking about that. And so probably longer than that, Zach, right? Because he had the Wizards, right, that were interested in him. So he's probably had it in the back of his mind that, look, I don't have a contract extension yet. I'm due to get paid. And so after this year's over, let's see how this thing plays out.
All right, good conversation, one that we're going to continue to have here throughout this Nuggets offseason. It's an important offseason.
There's no question.
I mean, Mike Malone called it the most important offseason. You could actually argue that this offseason is the most important offseason in the Nuggets franchise history.
I'd allow it.
All right, our friend Darren McKee, D-Mac, says he's at a 3 on the concernometer, yet he wants to do what now? Hang tight. Take a dive into it next.
It's Mission 16W. Bring the cup home to Denver. Getting you set for tonight's Game 6 in St. Louis. Here's Stokely and Zach.
Our guy D-Mac, who will join us at about 12:15, Dante, is that right? Yeah, about 12:15 live from St. Louis. And I got to tell you, my first question to him is going to be something based off what we're about to hear.
Mm-hmm.
There was an exchange between Tyler and D-Mac. Now, we had D-Mac on the show yesterday from St. Louis, and
I can't believe he's back there. Like, I still can't believe he's
back
there.
Well, it's his own fault. I mean, it's literally his own fault. The way that he acted on game day was just absurd. And then I think there's a little bit of maybe overcompensation with saying, well, I'm at a 3 because I can't possibly.
I missed it on game day. How was he behaving?
Oh, I mean, it's a wrap. It's over. He was tweeting from the game when they got up 3-0. This is over. He was doing a countdown to Alberta, literally like by the minute. So it was the ultimate, like, Stokely, the weeks leading up before the Raiders, just like
he was doing a countdown by the minute to Alberta.
He was. It's just like, dude, you are bringing on something that should not be invited into our lives. So we'll hold his feet to the fire here in just a little bit. But it was actually incredible to hear someone who's at such a low freakout rate to have the following discussion yesterday with Tyler Palumbus on the drive. Oh, we'll get to that.
I don't know if I can trust Kemper at this point. And I don't know what his psyche is. And, you know, frankly, maybe he just needs a mental break. And you can always bring him back for a game 7. You always could.
Man.
So why not give him a bit of a mental break? Put Frankie in there.
Oh, you don't bring him back, though. I mean, that's not a mental break. That's a permanent decision.
Depends how Francois plays.
I know. But if Frankie doesn't play good out there and you put Darcy back in net, you didn't go back to Darcy because you wanted to. You just went back to him because it's bad. So there's no mental break. If you make that change, that has to be a permanent change.
Okay, so D-Mac wants to change goalies here in the middle of a series.
Right.
Now, that is like switching your starting pitcher. That is like, you know, I guess you can make an argument that it's like switching quarterbacks. I don't think you can change this isn't like moving someone up or down on a line. That is as massive and fundamental as a change that you can make in the middle of a series for a hockey team. Not saying it can't work out. Look at the Blues. They gone back. Husso and Bennington, they found a way to make it work.
Just to interrupt real quick, that was out of necessity, number one, right? The tornado sirens were blaring for St. Louis, like, hey, this thing ain't working. We got to make a switch. So that's just to add that quick note.
And that was early in the first round, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I think it was after two games?
Yeah.
It was after three. They were down 2-1, right?
Yep, okay. Yep.
So they make a switch. To me, that signals, like, the alarms.
Right.
Like, you're freaking out.
Right.
Darren says he's at a three, but wants to change the hockey team in the most fundamental way in the middle of the series. It doesn't quite add up to me. That'll be my first question for him when he joins us at 12:15. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the idea of switching netminders here before game six?
Well, first of all, I think we're dealing with the Kool-Aid man a little bit with D-Mac. I think he's, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid of the calm tones that the Avs have had in the press conference. After I had this conversation with Chad yesterday before you guys came on, that after the game, I was a little surprised by the emotionless, even-keeled nature from Landeskog, MacKinnon, and Bednar in the post-game press conferences. And it's like I told Chad, I don't need these guys coming in there pulling their hair out, but at the same time, show me the sting. Like, show me that that stings. And because to any, and I said to Chad, I said, maybe they had a discussion before they walked out that, hey, look, you know, we're just not going to let anything show here. We're not going to tip our hand. You don't want to show weakness, right? Show frustration. And so when I said it, you know, this is a team who's ultra competitive. And as a competitor, that had to sting. Like, that's one where you walk back to the locker room, smash your stick. Like, how did we let that happen? And so when I look at, you know, the fact that D-Mac was so calm, I think it stems from the fact that the team was so calm, and he's very close to it at the moment in time. But from the outside perspective, you say, hey, look, there is a trend right here. No matter what they say, I'm going to believe my eyes rather than what I'm hearing. And I can tell you that something is amiss here. And so while I understand his opinion that maybe it's time for a change, there's a reason why you have Kemper, Zach. You moved Connor Timmins, who's one of your higher prospects in your system, and a first-round pick in the offseason to go get a guy on a one-year deal. There's a reason, additionally, that Darcy doesn't have a deal for next year. This is a prove-it mode for him. You're not going to rock the boat right now. That doesn't make sense. And so if Frankie had played a couple games in the series, then maybe you think about it. But that isn't what's going on. It's Darcy, unless something horrible happens to either him, he gets injured, right? Or he just flat out cannot play. And my argument to that is if he had more support in front of him in game five, then we wouldn't even be having this discussion and we'd be previewing Edmonton in the Western Conference Finals because there was a lot of mistakes in front of him that led to goals. Now, you got to be better and you got to buy your team a game and buy your team a save every once in a while. But if you don't get support from the guys in front of you, like you have all season long, we knew Darcy isn't Andre Vasilevsky. Like right. We know right. that about right. this guy. Right. He's good enough,
yep.
But you got to be good enough in front of him.
I think two things are both true here and living in the same universe is that everything that you just said is true about the right. guys in front. And then also, when it's time to step up and make a save, now I'm not going to say like it's, you know, I am almost on the verge of saying one or two of those are routine stops.
Oh, they were. Sugarcoat it.
Those were soft goals. Yeah. Two of them in particular was just like, whoa, like what is happening? So to a certain degree, although I disagree with him, definitely in terms of D-Mac saying he wants to put Frankie in there, at the same time, what I saw wasn't close to good enough against anyone.
Right.
It wasn't like, well, you know, what the Blues were doing is like, oh my gosh, well, that was just, you know, you can't stop a one-timer. Like, he's only human. He's not an octopus. Like, well, you know, what would you expect? It wasn't like that.
No, it wasn't at all. And you're talking about a slow glove. You're talking about the rebounds problem that we saw early in the year pop up again, where he's just giving up too many second chance opportunities. And so when I look at Kemper, this is a huge night for him because the criticism on him coming into the year was, can you really trust a guy that's never been there and done that before? But my argument to that is that's how it is for everybody until they do it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, although noting that, hey, if this thing goes awry, we do have another option. But just know, you're not switching goaltenders because you're thinking you're getting an immediate upgrade. You're switching goaltenders because this is not good enough. And we're going to rock with Frankie, who had a good year, no doubt about it. But he catches on the other side. It's a different style. And he's not as big of a guy as Kemper. There's a lot of things that are different. So if you can't be good enough in front of Darcy, that effort's not going to cut it in front of Frankie. So you got to be better in front of Darcy. And Darcy's got to be better. It's time to put up or shut up because, like I said, he doesn't have a contract for next year. And if they want to win a cup, he has to be better. No two ways about it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Puck drops in just over 6 hours from now, man. I cannot wait. I am nervous.
I'm anxious, yeah.
I am. My high school basketball coach said this to me. He said, if you're not nervous, it must not mean that much to you.
Right.
And
yes.
It's like, this one means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot on the line tonight. Cannot wait to settle in and watch that one. News broke earlier this morning pertaining to one of our teams in Colorado that involves past blood, drama, and beef. Holy moly, you have got to hear this. Hang tight. We'll get to it next.
It's Mission 16W. Bring the cup home to Denver. Getting you set for tonight's Game 6 in St. Louis. Here's Stokely and Zach.
News broke a little bit earlier this morning pertaining to one of our teams in Colorado. And it involves past blood, drama, beef, all of that.
Mm.
The Colorado Avalanche and the Detroit Red Wings may have the greatest rivalry in the history of the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
The two teams just freaking hated one another in the late 1990s and early 2000s. All right. I can tell you, as a young hockey fan, like a young Sabres fan growing up in upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
I was fascinated by it.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, and I mentioned this from time to time, like when there's like a Denver sports story that's so big, it penetrates its way like across the country
to
little old me in Schenectady, New York. And
right.
I'm fascinated by whether it was the Tim Tebow conversation or Carmelo's early years with the Nuggets and how popular he was or this.
Mm-hmm.
This was so captivating. And news came out today. ESPN is putting together an E60 documentary on the Red Wings-Avs rivalry that will, in fact, be must-see television. And it's going to air, apparently, during the Stanley Cup Finals. There's a lot here.
Wait.
They put out the trailer. The trailer is fascinating unto itself. Now, do we have a piece of it? Dante, you just let me know when you got it ready. Oh, you do have it ready. Okay. So here's a snippet. Now, mm-hmm. This is a visual product, so you're going to have to just kind of use your imagination to a certain degree. But here is a snippet of ESPN's trailer that they put out.
That, my friend, look at somebody in the eyes and hitting them is a cold cup.
I just thought, like, I'm f***ing grabbing somebody here. Someone's getting me.
These kinds of things just seem to keep happening when these two teams play.
There's a winner, there's a loser. You'll do whatever you have to do to be on the winner's side.
Why so hateful? I would say because they're pricks.
I fucking hate them. I'll always hate them.
Okay, that's a snippet of the trailer.
I know, me too.
Dude, you're talking Sakic, Forsberg, Waugh, Foote, Crawford. I mean, the list goes on and on, and they're all part of it. I think you got tipped off by someone that Adrian Dater, our own Avs mm-hmm. insider, is going to be featured in the documentary.
Yeah.
This one has the word fascinating written all over it.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about one of the most heated rivalries in all of professional sports history. You've got to look at Avs Wings. You talk about two teams that hate each other. And there's a moment before when they're in the beginning of the trailer where they're interviewing Claude Lemieux. And they ask him about rivalries. And he said, well, the best rivalries, you know, only start on the ice. These two teams hated each other on and off the ice. Yep. And so there was real, real beef here between both of these clubs and just some amazing battles throughout the years, some just absolute wars. And you go back and you watch those videos. I mean, you're talking about blood streaming down everybody's face coming off the ice. And so I cannot wait. And more than anything, let's just hope the Avs are still in this thing, Zach, because if they're not and we've got to watch this, it's going to be just like... It's going to be very, very hard to stomach.
No doubt about it. I mean, the documentary standalone is going to be fascinating,
right.
Sure. But if the Avs are in the Stanley Cup Finals,
it adds
when
to
this
it.
Is supposed to air, I mean, it's going to be just the best.
It will be
the best,
right?
What do you remember? And let me just say this: these weren't two, like, bottom-feeding teams that just hated each other.
No.
These were two of the best teams that the sport had to offer. These were champions. And I don't know if we've seen anything that has even really come close to that.
No, we haven't. No, no, no. I mean, when we look at, as far as in hockey or the rest of sports,
you can broaden it if you'd like.
Yeah, and I think you could put it up against just about any rivalry, quite frankly, when you're talking about within the context of its own sport compared to others. This is as big as it's ever gotten, right, in hockey. You think about the original six rivalries, right? You know, you talk about Bruins, Canadiens, rivalries like that, you know. And when I look at the Avs and Wings, you're talking about two teams full of Hall of Famers. Just totally chock full, Zach. Yeah. C-H-O-C-K.
That's right.
Chock full of... You learn something new every day, don't you, Zach?
If you're willing. If you,
and I, unlike your partner, am willing to learn every day. So that's exciting for you. That must be a nice change of pace. No, what I remember most about these is just how bloody the battles used to be and how you knew every play coming to the boards, somebody was coming at you full steam to take your head off,
yep.
Right? And it was like that from the drop of the puck till the final whistle. So when I look at this, I am pumped for it. And like I said, let's just hope that we'll get into our predictions a little bit here later, but let's just hope that these guys are still hanging around, because I think it will only add to it as far as reintroducing a national television audience to the Colorado Avalanche.
Man, I'm excited about this one. I remember two things in particular about the actual fighting between the Avs and sure. the Red Wings as a young kid. So around this time, I was probably like 11, 12, 13, 14 in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so fascinated with, and I've shared this before on the show, I was so fascinated with like fights just in general in life. But hockey fights that I would have at my, when I go have visitation with my dad, I'd have a VHS in the TV.
Right.
And when a fight would start, I'd click record when you could record like on a VHS like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I still have the VHS to this day. And the tough guys at the time, the Chris Simons and Ty Domi and Rob
Darren
Ray,
McCarty,
and Darren
right.
McCarty and right. all these guys. I remember two fights in particular. The one, and I don't even remember, it was the first time I ever saw a hockey player hit another hockey player when he was down, because the officials were so scattered trying to break up an entire team
chaos.
Brawl
yeah.
that guys could still swing at each other on the ground, and right. I was just not used to seeing that. And the other one, there was a full-blown mix-up on the boards. And Chris Osgood from the Red Wings starts to skate out to center ice, and Patrick Waugh taking off his helmet and meeting him. And they fought, and they ended up right in front of the Red Wings bench. And the Red Wings players were leaning over, that weren't in the game, were leaning over the boards and almost like cheering Chris Osgood on as Osgood ended up on top of Patrick Waugh. It's just like legendary stuff. So I'm really excited as a grown-up be able to go back and learn, like going to, I don't know everything about that
sure.
period of time
yeah,
I wasn't
yeah.
here. So to learn about all the dynamics that I'm just kind of in my blind spot, and then to see what it looks like, what I saw many, many years ago as an adult.
And you know what I think is really interesting, and I'm glad we brought this up as far as a historical conversation goes, because if you, and I'm just guessing here, but if you were to ask people around the country, the names most commonly associated with the Colorado Avalanche are Patrick Waugh, Joe Sakic, and Peter Forsberg. Zach, it's time for a new set of names
yes.
to establish
yes.
themselves
yes.
for this franchise.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's why, additionally, to add another layer of just disappointment and just frustration, you know, stemming back to the other night, that this is the time. Everything is lining up for them. Now it's time you have to go seize it. And when you have it in your hand and you let it slip, this is what being a fan in the playoffs is all about, living and dying with your team,
yeah,
right? And
yeah.
so I'm like we mentioned, I'm just thrilled to watch a game tonight. I'm anxious, though. Let make no mistake about it. I am. My antennas are up, and they're at full mast here. I am ready to go here.
Your antennas are at full mast?
Yes, they are.
Interesting.
Yeah, they are.
And I didn't realize, by the way, Steve Yzerman is the GM for the Red Wings.
Of course.
So all these years later,
good old
all
Stevie
these years
y.
later, Steve Yzerman is the GM for the Avs and the Red Wings, and Joe Sakic. Isn't that cool?
It is cool.
That I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Who, in order, needs to step up the most tonight? will rank our five names.
Oh, good. Okay. All right, here we go.
Coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.